the sinners.
Blog Talk Radio.
Those denied the Lord of Spirits. It had been good for them if they had not been born. Witness the righteous will be revealed in the holy church, and above, truth and wrong the present of the righteous and elect. From that time,
we must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shut down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counters. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. And as I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Wait, do we Martin out of it? For a moment. Martin's very rare, very great man. Martin's rare for two reasons. Part because just because he is. And because he's a real Christian and he really believes in nonviolence. He's right at something in himself, which permits him, allows him to do it. And he still has great moral authority in the South. There's none whatever in the North.
And ennobles a man who will. I believe in this method because I think it is the only way to reestablish a growing community. There's a method which seeks to implement the just law by appealing to the conscience of the great decent majority, who through blindness, fear, pride, and irrationality have allowed their consciences to sleep. The nonviolent Christians can summarize their message in the following simple terms. We will take direct action against injustice. Despite the failure of governmental and other official agencies to act first, we will not obey unjust laws or submit to unjust practices. We will do this peacefully, openly, cheerfully, because our aim is to persuade. We adopt the means of nonviolence because our end is a community at peace. We will try to persuade with our words. But if our words fail, we will try to persuade with our acts. We will always be willing to talk and seek fair compromise. We are ready to suffer when necessary and even risk our lives in order to become witnesses to truth as we see it. This approach to the problem not at all without successful precedent. It was used in a magnificent way by Mohandas K. Gandhi to challenge the might of the British Empire and free his people from the political domination, economic exploitation inflicted upon them for centuries.
I feel that my influence was key And the righteous and the
life shall be without number before him forever and ever. And all the righteous and elect before him shall be strong as fiery light, and their mouth shall be full of blessing, and their lips extol the name of the Lord of spirits, and righteousness before him shall never fail, and uprightness shall never fail before him. There I wish to dwell, and my spirit longed for that dwelling place, and there hitherto hath been my portion, for so it hath been established concerning me before the Lord of spirits. In those days I praised and extolled the name of the Lord of spirits with blessings and praises, because he hath destined me for blessing and glory according to the good of the Lord of spirits. For a long time my eyes regarded that place, and I blessed him and praised him, saying, blessed is he, and may he be blessed from the beginning and forevermore. And before him there is no ceasing. He knows before the world was created what is forever, and what will be from generation unto generation. Those who sleep not, bless thee. They stand before thy glory and bless, praise, and extol, saying, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of spirits. He filleth the earth with spirits. And here my eyes saw all those who sleep not. They stand before him and bless and say, blessed be thou, and blessed be the name of the Lord forever and ever. And my face was changed, for I could no longer behold. The Four Archangels, Chapter 40. And after that I saw thousands of thousands, and 10,000 times 10,000. I saw a multitude beyond number and reckoning who stood before the Lord of Spirits. And on the four sides of the Lord of Spirits, I saw four presences different from those that sleep not. And I learnt their names. For the angel that went with me made known to me their names and showed me all the hidden things. And I heard the voices of those four presences as they uttered praises before the Lord of Glory. The first voice blesses the Lord of spirits forever and ever. And the second voice I heard blessing the elect one, and the elect ones who hang upon the Lord of spirits. And the third voice I heard pray and intercede for those who dwell on the earth and supplicate in the name of the Lord of spirits. And I heard the fourth voice fending off the Satans and forbidding them to come before the Lord of spirits to accuse them who dwell on the earth. After that I asked the angel of peace who went with me, who showed me everything that is hidden, who are these four presences which I have seen and was heard and written down? And he said to me, the first is Michael, the merciful and long-suffering, and the second, who is set over all the diseases and all the wounds of the children of men, is Raphael. The third, who is set over all the powers, is Gabriel. And the fourth, who is set over the repentance unto hope of those who inherit eternal life, is named Phanuel. And these are the four angels of the Lord of spirits, and the four voices I heard in those days. Chapter 41. Astronomical Secrets. And after that I saw the secrets of the heavens, and how the kingdom is divided, and how the actions of men are weighed in the balance. And there I saw the mansions of the elect, and the mansions of the holy. And mine eyes saw there all sinners being driven from thence, which deny the name of the Lord of spirits, and being dragged off. And they could not abide, because of the punishment which proceeds from the Lord of spirits. And there mine eyes saw the secrets of the lightning and of the thunder, and the secrets of the winds, how they are divided to blow over the earth, and the secrets of the clouds and dew. And there I saw from whence they proceed that place, and from whence they saturate the dusty earth. And there I saw closed chambers, out of which the winds are divided, the chamber of the hail and winds, the chamber of the mist, and of the clouds. And the cloud thereof hovers over the earth from the beginning of the world. And I saw the chambers of the sun and moon, they come again and their glorious return, and how one is superior to the other, and a stately orbit, and how they do not leave their orbit, and they add nothing to their orbit, and they take nothing from it, and they keep faith with each other in accordance with the oath by which they are bound together. And first, and traverses his path according to the commandment of the parents, and mighty is his name for ever and ever. And after that, I saw the hidden and the visible path of the moon, and she accomplishes the course of her path in that place by day and by night, the one holding a position opposite to the other before the Lord of Spirits. And they give thanks and praise and rest not, for unto them is their thanksgiving rest. For the sun changes oft for a blessing or a curse, and the course of the path of the moon is light to the righteous and darkness to the sinners in the name of the Lord, who made a separation between the light and the darkness, and divided the spirits of men, and strengthened the spirits of the righteous in the name of his righteousness. For no angel hinders, and no power is able to hinder, for he appoints a judge for them all, and he judges them all before him. The dwelling places of wisdom and of unrighteousness. Chapter 42. Wisdom found no place where she might dwell. Then a dwelling place was assigned her in the heavens. Wisdom went forth to make her dwelling among the children of men, and found no dwelling place. Wisdom returned to her place and took her seat among the angels. And unrighteousness went forth from her chambers, whom she sought not, she found, and dwelt with them, as rain in a desert, and dew on a thirsty land. Chapter 43. And I saw other lightnings and the stars of heaven, and I saw how he called them all by their names, and they hearkened unto him. And I saw how they are weighed in a righteous balance, according to their proportions of light. I saw the width of their spaces and the day of their appearing, and how their revolution produces lightning. And I saw their revolution according to the number of the angels, and how they keep faith with each other. And I asked the angel who went with me, who showed me what was hidden, "What are these?" And he said to me, "The Lord of Spirits has showed thee their parabolic meaning. These are the names of the holy who dwell on the earth and believe in the name of the Lord of Spirits, forever and ever." Chapter 44. Also another phenomenon I saw in regard to the lightnings, how some of the stars arise and become lightnings, and cannot part with their new form. The second parable. The lot of the apostates. The new heaven and the new earth. Chapter 45. And this is the second parable concerning those who deny the naked dwelling of the Lord of Spirits. And into heaven they shall not ascend, and on earth they shall not come. Such shall be the lot of the sinners who have denied the name of the Lord of Spirits, who are thus preserved for the day of suffering and tribulation. On that day, mine elect one shall sit on the throne of glory and shall try their works, and their places of rest shall be innumerable. And their souls shall grow strong within them when they see mine elect ones and those who have called upon my glorious name. Then will I cause mine elect one to dwell among them, and I will transform the heaven and make it an eternal blessing and light. And I will transform the earth and make it a blessing. And I will cause mine elect ones to dwell upon it. But the sinners and evildoers shall not set foot thereon. For I have provided and satisfied with peace my righteous ones, and have caused them to dwell before me. But for the sinners there is judgment impending with me, so that I shall destroy them from the face of the earth. The head of days and the son of man.
Themselves perishing flourishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. Innocence, the greatest tragedy of this old America, is what it does to little children. Little children in this other America are forced to grow up with clouds of inferiority forming every day in their little mental sky. As we look at this other America, we see it as an arena of blasted hopes and shattered dreams. Many people of various backgrounds live in this other America. Some are Mexican Americans, some are Puerto Ricans, some are Indians, some happen to be from other groups. Millions of them are Appalachian whites. Probably the largest group in this other America in proportion to its size and the population is the American Negro. American Negro finds himself living in a ghetto. A ghetto of race, a ghetto of poverty, a ghetto is to deal with this problem, to deal with this problem of the two Americas. We are seeking to make America one nation, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. Now let me say that the struggle for civil rights and the struggle to make these two Americas one America is much more difficult today than it was 5 years ago. For about a decade or maybe 12 years, we struggled all across the South in glorious struggle. Get rid of legal, overt segregation and all of the humiliation that surrounded that system of segregation. In a sense, this was a struggle for decency. We could not go to a lunch counter in so many instances and get a hamburger or a cup of coffee. We could not make use of public accommodation. Public transportation was segregated. Often we had to sit in the back and in transportation within cities, we often had to stand over empty seats because sections were reserved for whites only. We did not have the right to vote in so many areas of the South. The struggle was to deal with these problems. Certainly they were difficult problems, they were humiliating conditions. By the thousands we protested these conditions, we made it clear that it was ultimately more honorable to accept jail cell experiences than to accept segregation and humiliation. 5,000 students and adults decided to sit in at segregated lunch counters to protest conditions. When they were sitting at those lunch counters, they were in reality standing up for the best in the American dream, seeking to take the whole nation back to those great wells of democracy, which were dug deep by the founding fathers in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Many things were gained as a result of these years of struggle. 1964, Civil Rights Bill came into being after the Birmingham Movement, which did a great deal to the conscience of a large segment of the nation, to appear before the judgment seat of morality on the whole question of civil rights. After the Selma movement in 1965, we were able to get a voting rights bill. All of these things were crime. But we must see that the struggle today is much more difficult. It's more difficult today because we are struggling now for genuine equality. It's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee a livable income and a good solid job. It's much easier to guarantee the right to vote than it is to guarantee the right to live in sanitary, decent housing conditions. It is much easier to integrate a public car than it is to make genuine quality integrated education a reality. So today we are struggling for something which says we demand genuine equality, not merely a struggle against extremist behavior toward Negroes. I'm convinced that many of the very people who supported us in the struggle in the South are not willing to go all the way now. I came to see this in a very difficult and painful way in Chicago over the last year where I lived and worked. Some of the people who came quickly to march with us in Selma and Birmingham were active around Chicago. And I came to see that so many people who supported morally and even financially what we were doing in Birmingham and Selma were really outraged against extremist behavior of Bull Connor and Jim Clark for Negroes rather than believing in genuine equality for Negroes. And I think this is what we've got to see now, and this is what makes the struggle much more difficult. So as a result of all of this, we see many problems existing today that are growing more difficult. It's something that is often overlooked, but Negroes generally live in worse slums today. And 20 or 25 years ago, in the North, schools are more segregated today than they were in 1954 when the Supreme Court's decision on segregation was rendered. Economically, the Negro is worse off today than he was 15 and 20 years ago. So the unemployment rate among whites at one time was about the same as the unemployment rate among Negroes. But today the unemployment rate among Negroes is twice that of whites. And the average income of the Negro is today 50% less than white. As we look at these problems, we see them growing and developing every day. We see the fact that the Negro economically is facing a depression in his everyday life that is more staggering than the depression of the 30s. The unemployment rate, the nation as a whole, is about 4%. Statistics would say from the Labor Department that among Negroes is about 8.4%. These are the persons who are in the labor market who still go to employment agencies to seek jobs so they can be calculated. The statistics can be gotten because they are still somehow in the labor market. There are hundreds of thousands of Negroes who have given up. They've lost hope. They come to feel that life is a long and desolate corridor for them with no exit sign. So they no longer go to look for a job. There are those who would estimate that these persons who are called the discouraged persons, these 6 or 7% of the Negro community, that means that unemployment among Negroes may well be 16%. Among Negro youth in some of our large urban areas, it goes to 30 and 40%. So you can see what I mean when I say that in the Negro community, that is a major, tragic staggering depression that we face in our everyday lives. Now, the other thing that we've got to come to see now that many of us didn't see too well during the last 10 years, that is that racism is still alive in American society, much more widespread than we realize. We must see racism for what it is. It's the myth of the superior and the inferior race. It is the false and tragic notion that one particular group, one particular race is responsible for all of the progress, all of the insight, the total flow of history. And the theory that another group or another race is totally depraved, innately impure, and innately inferior. In the final analysis, racism is evil because its ultimate logic is genocide. Hitler was a sick and tragic man who carried racism to its logical conclusion. He ended up leading a nation to the point of killing about 6 million Jews. This is the tragedy of racism because its ultimate logic is genocide. One says that I am not good enough to live next door to him. One says that I am not good enough to eat at a lunch counter, to have a good, decent job, or merely because of my race. He is saying consciously or unconsciously that I do not deserve to exist. Use the philosophical analogy here. Racism is not based on some empirical generalization. It is based rather on an ontological affirmation. It is not the assertion that certain people are behind culturally or otherwise because of environmental conditions. It is the affirmation that the very being of a people is inferior. This is the great tragedy of it. I say that however unpleasant it is, we must honestly see it as this. Racism is still deeply rooted all over America, still deeply rooted in the North, still deeply rooted in the South. This leads me to say something about another discussion that we hear a great deal. That is the so-called white backlash. I would like to honestly say to you that the white backlash is merely a new name for an old phenomenon. Not something that just came into being because shouts of black power, or because Negroes engaged in riots and what, for instance. The fact is that the state of California voted a powerhouse bill out of existence before anybody shouted black power, or before anybody rioted and what. May well be the shouts of black power and riots and what in the Harlems and the other areas are the consequences of the white backlash rather than the cause of what it is necessary to see, that there has never been a single solid monistic determined commitment on the part of the vast majority of white Americans. The whole question of civil rights and on the whole question of racial equality. This is something that truly impels all men of goodwill to admit. It is said on the Statue of Liberty that America is the home of exile. It doesn't take very long to realize that America has been the home of its white exiles for years. It has not been the same kind of maternal care and concern for its black exiles from Africa. It is no wonder that in one of his flower songs, the Negro, sometimes I feel like a motherless child. What great estrangement, what great sense of rejection caused the people to emerge with such a metaphor as they looked over their lives. What I'm trying to get across is that our nation has constantly taken a positive step forward on the question of racial justice and racial equality. Over and over again, at the same time, made certain backward steps. This has been the persistence, so-called white backlash. In 1863, the Negro was freed from the bondage of physical slavery. But at the same time, the nation refused to give him land to make that freedom meaningful. At that same period, America was giving millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that America was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor that would make it possible for them to develop. Refused to give that economic floor to its black peasants, so to speak. This is why Frederick Douglass would say that emancipation for the Negro was freedom to freedom to the winds and rains of heaven, freedom without roofs to cover their heads. Went on to say that it was freedom without bread to eat, freedom without land to cultivate. It was freedom and famine at the same time. But it does not stop there. In 1875, the nation passed the Civil Rights Bill. Refused to enforce it. 1964, the nation passed a weaker Civil Rights Bill. Even to this day, that bill has not been totally enforced in all of its dimensions. The nation heralded a new day of concern for the poor, for the disadvantaged, brought in the king
on the political domination, economic exploitation, which is what them was. I felt that. That might have come to one of Jesus Christ, but the one that freed us all of us. I want you to commit to one great purpose. I want you to read Philippians 4:19. God will deliver the supply of going you to pay. God will open the door for you to pay. Would you like to be successful? God working the heart with you. Open up the door. The door will work for you. I want you to get ready and expect a miracle. Expect God to do something special for you. Expect God to open the door. It's a door work for you. There's a door work for you. Open up the door and let it come. God is able. Something for you. I'm praying for those that came to see us, we're talking about the peace of the world. We're talking about joy and joy of the world. I want to give you some prophecy. For 2019, 2020, there will be a new government. 2020, there will be a door open up. I want to share with you this morning the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King in America. We're all going on human race, but God is able to bring us out of it. The miracles of Jesus in our nation. Miracles of Jesus is more than special Jesus. Don't forget me on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday, and on Sunday morning from 11 to 12, Block Talk. I want to give you that number. You might call Blog Talk Radio. Be involved in our $1 trillion quote. And that's what we're working on, our $1 trillion quote. And we might be able to open up the door. I want to let you use this phone. I'm praying for those who are stuck, those who are children, those who need healing. I want to tell you,
still remains hostile to skirmish against others. Right politicians and clever talk eloquently against open houses. In the same breath, intend that they are not racist. All of these things tell us that America has been backlashing on the whole question of basic constitutional and God-given rights for Negroes and other disadvantaged groups for more than 300 years. So these conditions, existence of widespread poverty, tragic conditions in schools and other areas of life, all of these things have brought about a great deal of despair, a great deal of desperation, a great deal of disappointment and even bitterness in the Negro community. They all of our cities confront huge problems. All of our cities are potentially powder kegs as a result of the continued existence of these conditions. Many in moments of anger, many in moments of deep bitterness, engage in riots. Let me say, as I've always said, I will always continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that non-violence is the most potent weapon available to oppressed people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve. That in a real sense it is important for the Negro to even think of mounting a violent revolution in the United States. So I will continue to condemn riots, continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way, continue to affirm that there is another way. But at the same time, it is as necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the condition which calls persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is to be condemned right. I think America must see riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously. We condemn riots. In the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. What is it that America has failed to hear? Failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. Failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been given. It has failed to hear that large segments white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. So in a real sense, our nation summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. As long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these occurrences of violence riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. Now let me go on to say that if we are to deal with all of the problems that I've talked about, if we are to bring America to the point that we have one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice,
I could do it. Is all in his hands. Don't forget. Tomorrow night, call Luke's ancestors. Monday's been moving on this Monday. Pearl.